Hello and welcome to the European Hoops Podcast. We are a Sportitos presentation. We bring you all the coverage you need of the EuroLeague. Twice a week, every Monday and Wednesday, we recap and preview all the action and cover all the news surrounding the competition. Join us on this ride and learn more about some of the best basketball played in the world. Make sure you don't miss any episodes by subscribing to the podcast and follow us on Twitter at Itos EuroLeague. My name is Andre and these are my co-hosts, Tiago Cordeiro and Diogo Valente. How are you guys doing?
I'm fine, Andre. Let's talk the thing that we like the most. How are you doing, Diogo?
Hi, guys. I'm fine. Let's get to another episode. Let's talk about basketball.
Besides all the high-level games that we are about to recap, we had many news regarding the competition, including some news that just broke before we start recording with Balmaro joining Barcelona, or potentially joining Barcelona. Christos Tsereliz is the new coach of Panathinaikos for the rest of the season, and there are several rumors connecting several coaches to Panathinaikos for the next season, and the leading one is Pablo Laso. We will hit those news when the time comes. We saw the need for better relationships between EuroLeague and FIBA being underlined this week with several players like Guduric, Tokon Shengelia, Sasha Vzenkov and Walter Tavares having to do an extra effort to play both for their teams and for their national teams in a short period of time. On the injury front, Rubit was ruled out for the season. Lucic might have returned a bit too early to play for the German Cup for Bayern and might miss some additional time because of that. Dantome, after a few minutes of play, got an ankle injury and it's a risk of missing some time. We also saw Yabusele leaving earlier for Real Madrid. On the bright side, we also saw important returns like Djublevic, Lorenzo Brown and several Bayern players, and also Hasan Martin after 2.5 months returned to the competition. It was a special night for Habas and Virtus, where not only the player was back playing in EuroLeague, but he was also a big piece in this victory for the team. But we will cover everything that happened later in this episode. For Efes, according to the coach Ataman, missing season is at risk, and it's another issue for already the several issues that the team is presenting on the court. Another relevant piece of news was that Tyler Dawson became a free agent player after parting ways with the Texas Legends of the G League. He's looking for a return to Europe. This is one of the big names that can have a real impact in the outcome of this season of the EuroLeague. Olympiacos will be a perfect match. Efes with Misic news are certainly a team in contention, and Fenerbahce has also been reported to be interested in the player. What impact do you guys think that Dorsey can have in any of these teams or in any other team that you would like to see him playing for?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think Tyler would obviously be a great add for any EuroLeague team because he's a great player. I think Olympiacos is the perfect fit, not only because he played there and he knows the rest of the guys and the coach, but I think he's exactly what they're missing. I think they need a go-to scorer, and I just think he would be perfect for them. For Efes, I also think he would be very good, especially with Misic being out, because the ball doesn't stick with him as much. So I think it could be a good fit there, and he could help them a lot, solving some of their offensive issues. And for Fenerbahce as well, he can be a great add. But I think between Olympiacos and Efes, I think it makes more sense for those two teams. Tiago, what do you think?
I agree 100% with you, Diogo. I would love to see him playing in Olympiacos because they're needing their go-to guy, you know? And Tyler Dorsey might be the missing piece.
Yeah, we recently had our podcast where we discussed the power rankings. Do you think that this will be the piece that will put them as a clear first? I know that you had them as a first, I didn't, but this will be a piece that will put them above or at least at the very top of that group in a very clear way, don't you think that?
They would be on the different tier, in my opinion. They would be even higher.
And how do you see him fitting on the other teams?
On the other teams, on Efes, I don't like the fit because they already have guys who control the ball that much of time. And on the Fenerbahce side, they already have a guy like Wilbekin and Nick Kaledes who control the ball too. So in my opinion, he would fit way better on Olympiacos.
I tend to agree with you guys, and he will be a great fit for Olympiacos. What's reported is that Olympiacos is interested in a multi-year deal, already planning for the future, but the player seems to be seeking a career in the NBA or another chance in the NBA, and seems to be interested in a deal that will culminate in the end of this season. For Efes, I agree with you, Tiago, about being somewhat redundant, although adding talent is always a positive thing, but if it's as a replacement for Misic, if this news or if this potential news of him being out for the season are confirmed, then I see they needing a player like him to add to what they already have. The other big news was Bolmaru joining Barcelona, or at least it was rumored to be the case. How do you guys see like Bolmaru joining Barcelona, and what impact can he have on this team and on Barcelona this season?
I think it's a good fit for him because, like I said about Tao Dorsey and Olympiacos, he already played there. He's familiar with the players and the coach. And I think he could be a better backup point guard option for them than Rokas. And in terms of size, he's similar to Satoransky. If maybe he can learn from Sato, and I think he can become a very good backup option for them. So I think it's a good fit. What about you, Thiago?
If it's confirmed, I don't like this signing because Yoko Bates is playing a real good basketball, and I would love to see Bolmaru playing in different teams, as we previously talked on the previous episode that we had.
Yoko Bates is starting to play at a very high level. I understand that maybe his ceiling as a player might not be the highest. He might not become a superstar, but on his role and as a backup point guard, he's playing at a very, very, very high level. Of course, I think Diogo's point is perfect. Like, having Bolmaru to play alongside Satoransky and learn from him for Bolmaru in the long run, and this was reported to be a multi-year deal, I can understand why Barcelona will do it and how it can work both for the team and for the future of the player. But let's start hitting the games, and we will start recapping the game that happened in Tel Aviv, where Maccabi received and beat at Bayern 90-82. This was a very important win for Maccabi, hanging on to the 8th spot with a 13-12 record. There are 5 teams that are tied with a 13-12 record, and they are all tied for 6th place. Maccabi on the tie breaks, they end up in 8th place at this moment, and with this win they managed to continue to fight for the playoffs. The MVP of the game was Lorenzo Brown with 27 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists and 2 steals. Wade Baldwin IV also performed at a high level with 15 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists and impressive 3 block shots, while Corey Walden was the best for Bayern with 19 points, 3 rebounds and 4 assists. Maccabi playing at home, they were favorites for this game, and despite the 8-point win, this wasn't an easy one for them by any stretch of the imagination. After Bayern dominated the second and third quarters, and they built an 11-point advantage heading into the fourth quarter, until that point, the Bayern discipline versus the Maccabi lack of discipline were determinant factors in this game. Maccabi was able to survive 19 offensive rebounds from Bayern, and with a 29-point fourth quarter behind their leader Lorenzo Brown, they got this important win for their playoff aspirations. Thiago, how big was Lorenzo Brown's return for Maccabi?
As Diogo already said on messages, the biggest, because... He brings the best out of his guys. Baldwin play way better with him on the court and without without effort. You see, because Baldwin had a really good game and a really good field goal percentage because of Lorenzo Brown facilitating for him. Even Sorkin played better with Lorenzo Brown. So it's really good to see him on the court, and Maccabi is a different beast with him.
How good can Wade Baldwin be when he's alongside another playmaker? And right after this game, there are several reports that Maccabi, like they did with Sorkin and with Lorenzo Brown, they are looking to extend him also for a long period of time and keep building around this court. Diogo, what did you saw in this game, and how big was Lorenzo Brown, and how good it is that he's back?
Yeah, it's great for them that he's back. I love watching him and Wade Baldwin share the playmaking duties. I think they are two of the elite guards in EuroLeague. Obviously, his impact was amazing, scoring 27 with 6 assists. He makes everybody better. And having another guard to help him, Wade Baldwin was flirting with a triple-double with 15, 8, and 8. So, yeah, I think it was a good game. Maccabi started off a bit slow, and the three-point shooting kind of made a big difference in the first half. But then in the second half, Lorenzo Brown reminded everybody of who he is, and he took over the game, and he got the win for them. It's a very important win for Maccabi as they stay in a playoff position. So, yeah, very good game from them.
another thing that I like to watch on this game, it's how nice it is to see Trincieri to have some toys to play with. Like Bayern had several players back, Antar Wanter, Paul Zipser was also back, Obst was also back. They really managed to find ways to control the pace of the game, and they're very feisty, they are very combative, they make the game very physical. And when they have options, they manage to compete. Of course, Maccabi is a superior team, in my opinion, and they managed to take over the game in the fourth quarter and get the win. But it's Bayern is the team that really gives me some pleasure to watch. And either in Bayern or there are some rumors that Trincieri might be leaving the team in the end of the season, it will be interesting to see where he ends up, because he's a great coach and it's always a pleasure to watch his teams playing.
100%.
The next game was between Milano and Panathinaikos. The home team won 78-76. Thiago, I guess this settles it and Milano gets the top spot on our four rankings, don't you think?
I already agree with that. I called that. So yeah.
This was an excellent game and win for Milano in a matchup between two teams to keep an eye on the rest of the season. The MVP of the game was Brandon Davies with 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists and 1 block. Nicolò Melli had an excellent game with 14 points and 7 rebounds. And for Panathinaikos, the best player was Derek Williams with 21 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists and 1 steal. This was a character win for Milano. They had a good defensive performance, and Brandon Davies, the MVP of the game, was able to dominate in the inside. During the game, we saw Milano many times building 7 to 8 point leads, but Panathinaikos kept finding ways to fight and get back into the game. In the first half, especially in the second part, Messina was able to make defensive adjustments, but Derek Williams was giving a lot of trouble to Milano's forwards, and he ended the first half with 17 points in 16 minutes. Panathinaikos was able to run at times some interesting lineups that I think we should keep an eye on for the rest of the season, with Bacon, Matt Thomas and Derek Williams all playing together. These lineups were able to provide them size and athleticism and also spacing that they have been needing at some points this season. In the end, Melli had 2 clutch free throws, followed by a great defensive play of Tunut on Bacon. Tunut also had a very good game that sealed the deal for Milano. Yeah, we have our answer. Our power rankings are settled. What did you saw in this game, and what did you saw in this highly competitive game between these two teams?
As I previously called it on the previous episode, I thought that the key for this game was Milano's bigs, and Brandon Davies was unstoppable on this game. Derek Williams was shooting the lights out too, but it wasn't enough, and he got exposed on the defensive side, because Panathinaikos needs size on the forward position. So yeah, in my opinion, that this was the key for the game, because Brandon Davies had a really good one.
Yeah, I think this was a very competitive game. Ultimately, the offensive rebounding battle, Milano just had 14 offensive rebounds against 6 from Panathinaikos, so I think that was a big difference maker. In our preview, I predicted a very good guard matchup between Napier and Paris Lee, and I think that matchup did not disappoint. I think they both had very good games. Napier with 16 points and 5 assists, and Paris Lee with 13 points and 6 assists. But I mean, it was just a very close game throughout. There was never a double-digit lead. Brandon Davies played a very good game, like you guys said already. And then other than Papagiannis, I think Panathinaikos was just a small team against Milano's bigs. And I think that was the biggest difference maker in this game. Derek Williams played a very good game, scoring-wise, but they just didn't have enough.
They were missing Goody Aitis, and they really are lacking some size on that front court besides Papagiannis. In the next game, Real Madrid had a dominant win over Žalgiris, 96-69. For Real Madrid, this was a chance to stay on the top of the standings, while Žalgiris dropped to 10th place, where they are part of that 5-team tie that we mentioned previously. The MVP of the game was Zanan Musa with 17 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal and 1 block. Poirier had 11 points, 8 rebounds and 2 blocks. And Brazdeikis had 16 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists and 1 steal. Žalgiris was able to compete early on in the first quarter, where they were winning 24-22 in the end of the first. But Real Madrid took over the game in the second quarter and stepping up their defense, allowing only 28 points in the second and third quarters. Thiago, what are your takes on this dominant performance by Real Madrid?
It's really tough to see Žalgiris the way they're playing right now, because they were an odd team in EuroLeague. Now they're kind of slowing down. Real Madrid played really good. Walter Tavares had a really good game, 16 points. He was the key, in my opinion, because if they could take him off the court, Zalgiris might have a chance. And the wings from Real Madrid had a really good night too, because they defended Ulanovas. Ulanovas only scored 3 points. And if the Zalgiris best player, one of Zalgiris best players, only scores 3 points, it's really tough to win.
Yeah, on this game, I predicted a comfortable win for Real Madrid, but I didn't expect a 27-point win. They played very good, and they showed that they were the superior team. I think Musa played, was very good, and he dominated the matchup against Ulanovas. And Brazdeikis played a good game, but Musa was able to come out on top between the wings. After the first quarter, it was just pure domination by Real Madrid. I mean, there's really not much to say about this game. Everybody contributed for Real Madrid, and they just dominated.
Yeah, I think one of the notes that we can have from this game is like Real Madrid was able to take a lot of the driving game away from Zalgiris, and right now they struggle a lot to find other options. If they cannot drive, if they cannot find any actions like that, they really don't have a lot of answers. And Real Madrid really was able to step up in the second quarter defensively, and they just took the game away, and there was no looking back for them. The next game was one of the games that we were expecting the most, and Partizan received Fenerbahce and lost 94-97. This was an extremely important game for both teams, and Fenerbahce came out of it with a key 3-point win. This win gets them in fourth place in the standings with a record of 15-9. Securing home court advantage will be crucial for these playoffs in the EuroLeague, and this was a big step for Fenerbahce to do it, especially as we will recap later with Monaco losing. Partizan holding on to the sixth place, where they lead that five-team tie with Baskonia, Maccabi, Valencia and Zalgiris. The MVP of the game was Marko Guduric with 25 points, 2 rebounds, 7 assists and 2 steals. Pierre with 21 points, 6 rebounds and 3 assists was very important for Fenerbahce, while Panther was the best for the home team with 25 points, 1 rebound and 2 assists. This was a game of rounds for both teams since early in the game. Partizan started the game with a 9-3 lead. Fenerbahce came back and built an 11-point lead. Partizan was able to answer, and the game went into halftime 46-47. Fenerbahce had an impressive 59% field goal percentage in this game and shot 14 from 26 from the three-point line to secure this win in the end. It was a massive road win for Fenerbahce. What impact do you think that this game have for both teams, Thiago?
For Fenerbahce, this was a really good one because this was a key game for them. And it was a direct opponent because Partizan was on a fight too. And Fenerbahce secured the fourth spot, and it's really good for them because they weren't on a good momentum, and now they could build up after this win. About Partizan, I still expect them to make the playoffs. This was a really tough loss for them, but I expect them to be on the playoff. Fenerbahce offense punished a lot of the show screens and the double teams after a screen that Lazard was doing with the short roll by Motley, and after that he was killing it in the mid-range and then kicking off for their guys. Then Partizan, on the last part of the game, they adjusted with the help coming from the corner, and Fenerbahce with Nikolaidis and Wilbekin passing to the corner, and Fenerbahce was scoring a lot of 3 points in the corner. So it was a really good game. It was really good to see the adjustments by the coaches.
The thing that this game did as well, besides the high level basketball and that we were able to enjoy, it created a gap between the top five teams and the other teams fighting into the playoffs. The cementing Monaco, Fenerbahce, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Olympiacos as the top five contenders for this edition of the EuroLeague. Duke, what are your takes on this game?
Yeah, for me, this was the game of the week in this front 25 of EuroLeague. I think Fenerbahce needed this win because they were going through some tough times, and this is a great way to do it because And my biggest takeaway from this game is that they shot the ball very well, especially due to their ball movement, because they had 21 assists. And I think that contributed a lot to those 14 threes made and shooting over 50% from three. So I think that was the big reason for this win. Partizan's big three of Panther, Exum, and Lasort, they showed up and they played a very good game. But Fenerbahce put up a total team effort and they were led by Gudurić, who was amazing. And this is a great win for Fenerbahce. For Partizan, though, I think this could be very dangerous because with the playoff race that's going on between about six or seven teams, I think this loss could cost them because it was at home and other teams are coming, like Efes. They're trying to stay on the right path now. Valencia, Maccabi, Baskonia, it's going to be very tough. I think they are capable of making the playoffs, but it's going to be tough. I think they needed this one.
We will speak about that playoff race later, and Virtus has something to say, and they want to make it a seven-team race. But let's move on from the best game of the week to the biggest surprise of the week, where Red Star received and lost to Alba 72-87. Red Star truly blew this one up. They sit now in 13, 2 wins below the playoffs, and they are needing to leapfrog 5 teams to be able to make it to the playoffs, making their life very hard. The MVP of this game was Low with 24 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists and 3 steals. He also showed something that we have been pointing out of his impact on the Alba ability to play, especially offensively. Olinda with 13 points, 7 rebounds and 1 assist was the second best player for Alba, while Luka Mitrovic was the best player for Red Star with 8 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. This very modest stat line, it's a mirror of the way that Red Star perform on this game. The game started with a 25-15 first quarter in favor of Red Star, but Alba took over the game, and in the last 30 minutes of the game, they scored 72 points and allowed only 47. Red Star wasn't able to perform on defense, and they really struggled from the three-point line, shooting only 5 from 28. It was an impressive road win for Alba. It must have been extremely exciting game for you, Tiago, with Petrushev having one of the best poster dunks of the season, Sigmund Procida playing at a very good level and being part of this big win for Alba.
It was a really good game. And can we talk about Sigma assists? Behind the back, nutmeg. This guy is a lead playmaker. And it's like you said, it's good to see Petrushev being physical and being intense. He's proving that he's one of the best power forwards in the league. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see his career. About the Red Star, it's like we've been talking about their lacking defense and offensive solutions. I'm expecting to them to improve with Campazzo being on the court now after this round, but I don't see them making the playoffs or even in the fight. Diogo, what's your takes about this game and about Crvena Zvezda chances to the playoff spot?
Yeah, I think about this game, I think we all predicted a Red Star win. And they started the game very slow, but then when Nedovic and Petrushev came off the bench, they started to push the pace and they immediately got a double-digit lead. And I thought it was going to stay that way the rest of the game. But then the second half was totally different. Maldolo played a very good second half, and his ability to score was unmatched by Red Star's players. So yeah, and then in the fourth quarter, Red Star had no answers for Alba, but they got blown out 11-27. And at home in such an important game like this one, they just couldn't allow that to happen. And I think this loss just cost Red Star a place in the playoffs, because I think they really needed to win this one. And now with only 11 wins and 14 losses, I don't think they're going to be able to turn this around, even when Campazzo gets back. So, yeah, this is a very bad loss for them.
Yeah, they really blew the chances on this one, because, of course, it's not one loss that will cost them the playoffs, but they will need to be almost perfect to get there. And I don't think they're not one of the elite teams of the EuroLeague to be able to do it and to still find their way into the playoffs, especially when there are so many teams fighting to be there. The next game was almost a surprise. We started the Asvel against Efes game with the news of Misic potentially missing the season. Asvel lost 89-90 This was a very competitive basketball game where Efes conquered a very crucial road win for their playoff aspirations. The MVP of the game and the hero of the game in the end was Will Clyburn with 20 points, 1 rebound, 3 assists and 2 steals. Elijah Bryant had 14 points, 10 rebounds and 2 assists, while Nando DeColo was the best one for the home team with 20 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists and 2 steals. Efes went into the fourth quarter with an 11-point lead after dominating the third quarter, winning that quarter 27-12. Asvel scored 28 points in the fourth quarter and was able to fight their way back into the game. Elijah Bryant tied the game at 86 with a three-pointer that was promptly answered by DeBost, giving Asvel the 86-89 lead. Clyburn went 4-of-4 from the free throw line to close the game and had a clutch steal that generated a lot of protest from Asvel's side to seal this important win for Efes. After the game, we heard Clyburn praising Ataman about the job that the coach did during this break and also the forced game that the Turkish team had to miss. Keeping everyone in the good physical and mental shape. It's always good to hear when players are recognizing the coach's job. And this victory was a must win for Efes that they are now in 11th place, trailing one game behind the 8th place. If the worst case is confirmed and Misic does miss the rest of the season, what impact do you think it might have for Efes, Tiago?
With Misic being out, in my opinion, I see guys stepping up. Elijah Bryant, Bilbao, Shane Larkin had a really good game too with 16 assists. So with him out, I see their offense I see them in the offense sharing the ball more than they're used to.
I think it's not a Misic problem. I think they will miss him a lot because he's a high-level player and one of the best players in the league. I think it's an Efes problem. I think it's about their team dynamics and the ball sharing don't come only from Misic. I know that we just recently saw them having a game where Misic was in the bench and their offense was flowing a bit better, but I think that they really will miss him. And before we hit the recap of this game, Diogo, I would like to hear your thoughts on Misic missing the rest of the season impact on Efes.
Well, I do understand Thiago's point about the offense without him. I just think that without him, their ceiling lowers a lot because they're still a very talented team, obviously, with two elite players in Shane Larkin and Will Clyburn. But I think Misic puts them on another level, though. And I agree with you, Andre. The offense, I think it's a team problem, and it's not just about Misic. So yeah, I agree with you. I think they will miss him a lot, obviously.
But regardless, like, it's mostly about the ceiling of the team. Like, with him, they have a championship ceiling. Without him and struggling to make it to the playoffs, I don't think they are anymore at that level. But let's recap this game. And Thiago, what are your thoughts about this game?
The game was close. It was really close for the entire game. In the third quarter, Efes took out with 27-12. So at the end, in my opinion, Efes doesn't know how to close the games. And with Misic on the court, I think they will be better closing the games.
Yeah, and the thing that was so good to watch, it was like, how good is Asvel backcourt with DeBost and Nando DeColo, isn't it, Diogo?
Yeah, they are great.
It's so fun to watch those two playing together.
For me, without Misic, I think Will Clyburn and Shane Larkin had to step up, and they ultimately did, and they got the win. This was a very close game the entire time. Asvel tried to put up a fight as much as they could, and earlier in the game, they were able to force a lot of turnovers for Efes. And then, like we've been saying, we think Efes should shoot more threes and play faster. And they made 11 threes this game, and they shot over 50% from three. They took more outside shots, and I think that was a big difference maker for them. And I think that helped them get the win.
The next game was a game between Virtus and Baskonia, where the home team wanted to claim their position as playoff contenders, and they got the win 88-83. I guess we can't discount Virtus from the playoff mat just yet. With this important win, they are in 12th place, only one win below the 8th place. They are building a very good momentum with three wins on their last four games. In this game, Milos Teodosic was the MVP with 17 points, 2 rebounds, 7 assists and 1 steal. Çengelya with 12 points, 4 rebounds and 3 assists was very important for Virtus, while Giedraitis with 25.7 rebounds, 1 assist and 2 steals was the best player for the visitors. It was impressive to see Virtus' ability to take advantage of Baskonia's defensive issues and being able to outscore them. One of the stories of the night was Habas returning to the EuroLeague 5 years after his last game on the competition and being able to perform at a great level, bringing energy and athleticism that Virtus really needs and can use. We saw him at moments defending Marcus Howard face-to-face and trying to take him away from the game, and he was able to do so at spaces. This was a great win for Virtus, and Baskonia is now in 7th place with a record of 13-12. Tiago, what impact do you see this Virtus win having for both of these teams?
In my opinion, Virtus won't be in the playoff hunt. And for Baskonia's side, I see things getting hard for them, but I can see them making the playoffs or being on the 9th spot. Because I think Maccabi is going up, and Valencia will be on the same level that they are right now. So Baskonia might fight for the 8th spot, in my opinion, with Efes.
If you had a Virtus fan in front of you right now, he will be pointing out that they just beat the team that you said that will end up in 8th place, and they are just one win below them. Why are they not able to get there?
Because we got Maccabi, and F is in the hunt too with Valencia, and these three teams are better than Virtus, in my opinion.
Okay, very well. Diogo, what are your takes on this game?
I don't know if you guys remember, but on the preview, when we were discussing our matchups, I said that I wouldn't go with the guards because I can never go against Milos Teodosic. And I think I guessed it right because he ended up being the MVP of the game with 17
assists. Yeah, that was a good call.
I think this is a very important win for them. Obviously, like we've been talking, their ability to stay alive in the playoff hunt. So, and against a direct opponent. So this was very good for them. It was a very close game. It was very well played. I just want to give a shout out to Shengelia for being able to play for Virtus and then going to play for his national team. I think that's big time. But yeah, this was a very good game. Like you said on the preview, Andre, I think if Virtus was able to keep the game close, that they would win it at the end. And they led for most of the game. It was always close, but they were always on top. And they were able to control it in the fourth quarter and get the win.
Yeah, it was certainly a great win for Virtus. Let's move on to Valencia, where we had an insane game of basketball. Valencia received Olympiacos and lost 85-92. There were constant crazy scoring runs for both sides. In the end, Olympiacos got the win and secured their position on top of the standings with an 18-7 record. Valencia is part of that five-team tie for sixth place and is now in ninth in the standings. The MVP of the game was the team captain, Kostas Papanikolaou, with 22 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 block. Stashev Zenkov had 20 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal. And Prepelic was the best for the home team with 21 points, 1 rebound, and 4 assists. Valencia came into this game with a high level of intensity and physicality. They forced 9 first-half turnovers for Olympiacos, clearly taking them out of their rhythm. Valencia also came into this game on fire and they scored 9 three-pointers on the first half. But Olympiacos answered by dominating the third quarter, scoring 30 points and allowing only 13. Olympiacos kept their perfect record in Valencia, winning all the 7 times that they played there. Olympiacos had, as expected, a hard test in Valencia, as we had predicted here on our last podcast, but they got back into the game led by their team captain, Papanikolaou. Walkup, on his post-game interview, shared a story from halftime where Cannon was telling his teammates that there is nothing wrong with being down. Now we show our true face and what we are made of. And that's what they did. The Olympiacos was able to come back into the game and to dominate it. Bart Hawkins, in the end of the game, said that this was one of the most important wins of the season. For Valencia, the collapse in the third quarter was too big. This was amazing basketball. What caught your eye on this one, Thiago?
About this game, the first half was such a masterpiece of the art of sharing the ball in the off-ball movement. And both teams were always searching for the best situation to score. It was a really good game to watch. It's really nice to see Dubljević back in the game. His three-point shooting was elite. It's nice to see him back. And even Kostas Lucas, it's really nice to see him too, to improve their offense. So yeah, but in the third quarter, Valencia stopped playing D and allow Olympiacos to play their game and to build their momentum off transitions and off fast break situations. So yeah, I wanted to mention too, Prepelic game. He had a plus minus of plus 22. It's really tough because they lost, but Prepelic had a really good game.
Yeah, he was really impactful, and we even saw him at moments, Mombru putting him at defending Zenkov for some plays in the game, and he was really impressive, and he was all over the court. He really was the best player for Valencia, and he was embodying the energy and the physicality that Valencia came to this game and was playing with. Diogo, what did you saw in this game?
For me, on this game, I think Valencia started on a very high level, sharing the ball, and they got 8 assists on the first quarter. And that gave them immediately a double-digit lead. And they were also playing very good defense because they forced a lot of turnovers for Olympiacos in the first half. And that allowed them to keep that double-digit lead. On the third quarter, though, Olympiacos came out of the half-time with a chip on their shoulder. And they showed that they are the best team in EuroLeague. They outscored Valencia 30-13. And Vezenkov and Papanikolaou took over the game scoring the ball. And Walker and Slukas were distributing, and everything got easier for them. So this is a very good win for Olympiacos. They keep their 7-game win streak alive. And for Valencia, it could be dangerous, but it's not a bad loss because it is against Olympiacos, and they are the best team in the league. But it could hurt them because, like we said before, that playoff race is super close. But yeah, this was a very high-level game, and I enjoyed it a lot.
And another game that we expected to be high-level, and it was, to a point, was Barcelona-Monaco, with Barcelona winning 80-70. Barcelona continues to dominate their matchups against Monaco since this team joined the EuroLeague. The MVP of the game on his 300th game in the EuroLeague was Jan Vasely with 12-7-3. Thomas Satoransky, the other Czech player of Barcelona, had 15 points, 1 rebound and 2 assists, while Mike James was the best one for the visitors with 14 points, 3 rebounds and 3 assists. Barcelona came into the game focused and very disciplined on defense, as they usually do. They slowly built their lead and ended the first quarter ahead 24-18. On the second quarter, we had more of the same, with Barcelona operating very smoothly and went into the halftime scoring 50 points and allowing 39. We saw Barcelona's size giving issues to Monaco, and at some points of the game, Barcelona went extra big with lineups with Vesely, Toby, Kalinic, Satoransky and Vildoza. Monaco was able to reduce the disadvantage on the third quarter to 8 points, and they kept Barcelona scoreless for the first 4.5 minutes of the fourth quarter. But Barcelona was able to take over the game in the last 5 minutes of the game and get this win. This was a hard loss for Monaco, that they are now in fifth place with a 15-10 record. And we saw some attrition in the team, with Mike James and the coach arguing in the last time out of the team in the bench. Barcelona continues their good season in the EuroLeague. We saw them being very aggressive, driving a lot to the basket, and that really gave some troubles to Monaco. Barcelona has been struggling to be able to be consistent for the whole 40 minutes of the game. Satoransky was pointing that out in his post-game interview. He said after the loss in the cup and some struggles in some games of the EuroLeague, they being able to bounce back and the way that they responded to a better momentum of the Monaco in the second half, and they dominated the last 5 minutes of the game, was very important for the team, not only because of getting this win, but also psychologically. These are two of the top teams in the EuroLeague, but this matchup highlighted some of the Monaco's fragilities. Are they really at the level of the other top five teams of this competition, Thiago?
Their problem is defense and size, in my opinion, and Barcelona exploit that as much as they can. So I see Monaco being on the first tier, as we mentioned, on the power rankings, but kind of like the lowest team on that tier. Because they have a really good offense with the offense firepower with guys like Lloyd or Kobo. But I see the problem is just defense and size. Because the other teams, Real Madrid, Barcelona, has that.
About this game, what are your takes about this match between these two teams?
It's really nice to see Satoransky playing. And with him out, Jokubaitis was doing a really good job. And it's, if you see the box score, you see guys contributing so well. Shanley, all guys, all nine guys had a really good game. Abrini's 9 points. So it's a really good team to watch. And I think they are playing their best basketball of the season, because they were winning, but they were struggling to win. And now they're having a good momentum. On Monaco's side, I'm looking forward to see if Moneke could contribute more, because he had 0 points. And even on the boards, he only had two. So in my opinion, the key for Monaco is to Moneke to step up.
Might be getting to a point where maybe our expectations on Moneke were a bit too high.
Yeah, true.
Because it's he's an energy player, and he can contribute a lot. But I don't know if he gives them more than Alpha Diallo is giving them, for example. I don't know if he's an upgrade on him. He's a good player, and for sure he's a good depth piece for them to have. But I think that's it. It's a good player. It's not a star. It's not an additional star for that Monaco.
It's a good role player, Yeah,
a very good role player. And I think that Monaco might be building a powerhouse for the next years in the EuroLeague, and the team that will be able to be constantly on the playoff contention and even fighting for championships. There are reports of them adding like new players, and we will report on that as soon as those are confirmed. For now, they are just rumors. But I agree with you. I agree a lot that they are lacking some size and some ability to fight against those top teams. What do you think, Jörg?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think Monaco is a very good team, but they do lack some size. And I mean, they have bigs, but I don't know. Monty Unas is not mobile enough. Dante Hall is very athletic, but it's not a guy that you give him the ball on the post and let him handle it. So that, in terms of their threes, their forwards, I don't think they have enough good ones, at least for this level. And their bigs, they have some limitations as well. And I think that's a big problem for them. But with those type of guards, I think they have a chance against anybody. But I wouldn't consider them favorites, though. But they are an elite team, a very good playoff team. And I think they can give trouble to any of the other four that are above them right now. But in regards to the game, Barcelona did a great job trying to bother Mike James with size, having Satoransky and Corey Higgins on him and forcing him to get rid of the ball. Every screen that he asked for, they were hard showing or doubling. They just didn't allow them to get the switch that he wanted. And then Barca had much better ball movement. They were finding the mismatches, and they were punishing Monaco. They were also finding their shooters, and Alex Abrines especially. Barca tried to get into their offense quick, which allowed them to have a lot of time to run their half-court offense and just play good half-court basketball. And I think Satoransky or Vezeli, they both played great games. Sato, more on the perspective of controlling the game and the pace of the game. And Vezeli came off the bench, and it was immediate impact. Putback dunks, offensive rebounds. He played a very good game. So I think Barcelona right now has an argument to be the top team in EuroLeague. But they are playing very good basketball, and I think they're on the right way. We'll see.
Is there a best starting five, or it's not really a starting five, but a best five in the EuroLeague than Sato, Higgins, Kalinic, Mirotic, and Vesely? The center spot could kind of change, but is there a best five in the EuroLeague than these five guys?
In my opinion, there is.
Whom?
I think FS at full strength with Shane Larkin, Misic, Elijah Bryant, Wilt Clyburn, and to me, Tibor Pleiss, but it could be Zizic. I think that's a better starting five. But Barcelona does play a better style, offensively at least.
Yeah, but do you? I understand, and especially offensively, it will be very hard for me to have any arguments. But the ability that Barcelona has to play on both sides of the court, can IFES really match that?
I understand. I mean, like we've talked about before, IFES obviously is struggling this season. I'm just going by what I think they can do. But yeah, I agree with you. Barcelona probably has the best starting five. Maybe Real Madrid maybe has an argument, but yeah, I can understand your point.
What do you think, Tiago?
With Fenerbahce at full strength, I think that Fenerbahce might have a way to enter on this discussion. Because with Nicolaides, Wilbekin, with Nigel Hayes, or with Nemanja Bjelica too, and with Motley, I think they're one of the best teams too. So Barcelona is up, but I think Fenerbahce is on the second position.
I just think that probably Sato's size and his ability to play both sides of the court, I think that's kind of the what gives them an advantage here. Because in terms of talent, of course, any of those fives that we just discussed, of Barcelona, of Real Madrid, of Fenerbahce, Efes, they are all up there. But I think that that gives some edge to Barcelona. And I think that's why, for me, they are the favorites to win this edition of the EuroLeague. Of course, we will see who signs whom and who wins it all in the end.
Yeah, for Sarah, he's a difference maker. I agree with you, Andre.
He might be one of the most influential players of the EuroLeague, even if numbers-wise, he's not up there. Very well, guys. This was another European Hoops episode. Make sure to tune in next Wednesday when we will preview all the action of Round 26. Subscribe to the podcast and also follow us on Twitter at Ethos EuroLeague, where we bring you any news that break about the competition, our daily picks, must-watch games, injury reports, and our trades in the end of each day of the competition, bringing you all the highlights of the action. My name is Andre, and I will be seeing you guys soon.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having us. I hope you guys enjoyed the same as we did, and stay tuned for more.
Bye, guys. Stay tuned for more. See you on next episode.